When you think boots, you think Ariat. You think comfort from day one and durability to day 1,000. You think steel toes on the job, square toes on the dance floor, with style that owns a Saturday night and still looks sharp enough for Sunday dinner. And through every mile and every moment, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, turn bad ideas into better stories, and still punch the clock come Monday morning. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat boots at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Hey, thanks for downloading this podcast. If you want to listen live, be sure to download the iHeartRadio app and search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Stop being stupid, people.
All bets are off.
You all suck.
I'm Morenci Unfiltered.
Scumbags!
On a grid, sports grid, Morenci Unfiltered, the podcast. I am Morenci. Let's do this thing. Joe Lisi is going to step up in a little bit later on. We're going to talk some college football and the potential of college football, which could, you know, of course, coordinate with college basketball as well. There's a lot of unknowns right now. But one thing we do know is that the Last Dance ratings continue to kick ass on ESPN. Let's bring in Pete Annapolis right now to talk about that and more. Pete, it's always a pleasure. How you doing, Pete?
Hey, I'm doing great, Gabe. Thanks for having me on again.
So, Pete, the Last Dance continues and as it continues, you see different layers of Michael Jordan, and some of them aren't always pretty. And there's one thing that we're learning right now is that, you know, not everybody once you have a grudge with Michael Jordan, there's a grudge forever. And once you say something and you cross him in some way that he feels slighted in any way, you know, he holds a grudge forever. Basically, I guess the word I'm looking for is, despite how great of a basketball player he was, he's a pretty petty individual, actually, in real life, isn't he? As we see, and as we find out now, you know, you see the Isaiah Thomas stuff, all right, fine. You guys were competitors, but he has, you know, there's a lot of sort of stuff with his own teammates where there's no love lost. And you see Charles Barkley talking about how Jordan doesn't talk to him anymore, because Charles Barkley criticized Jordan's ownership skills, and that was that. Jordan cut him off after that.
No question. We're seeing a lot of things, and specifically when Mr. Smith came out with the book, The Jordan Rules, that gave a lot of anxiety to some of Michael Jordan's teammates and the Chicago Bulls surrounding team on the court, off the court, the management. Listen, Michael Jordan is the greatest player of all time. He's the greatest athlete of all time. And winning, it comes with a price. But with Michael Jordan, it was clear you cannot cross him because, like you said, he will hold a grudge forever. And we saw it not only now with Charles Barkley, but also with Horace Grant at the time. He wasn't happy being that third fiddle to him and Scottie Pippen. And even Scottie Pippen at one point, he said that LeBron James was the greatest player because, you know, Jordan criticized him because he was holding out. As long as, you know, he was not playing and supporting him, hey, that was Michael Jordan. Very competitive. Ultra competitive, and we're seeing a side to Michael. And again, the narrative is controlled here. Michael Jordan is the one that signs off on anything that's being broadcast. But to him, he's like, hey, he doesn't care. Yeah, I was like that. I punched out Will Perdue. I punched out Steve Kerr. I wanted to win. And what was most important to Michael Jordan? Winning on the basketball court and then winning at everything off the court, whether playing cards, gambling, on the golf course. I mean, it was funny. He was playing in the back of the plane with the guys for the high stakes poker money and card money with Ron Harper and those guys. He would go to the front of the bus to John Paxson, Bill Wennington, those four guys. They were playing a dollar a hand. He wanted to beat them. He wanted to take their money. That was Michael Jordan. So I think people are seeing the greatness that Jordan had on the court, but they're seeing a different side of him off the court, but not a lot of people do.
You know, and it's a fascinating look. And listen, at this point, nothing is really ever going to hurt. Nothing is ever really going to hurt, you know, Michael Jordan's brand. He is who he is. Everybody knows. You know, people know these stories, but we've sort of arrived here at, you know, it's a tell-all, but it's not a tell-all, right? It's not a tell-all. Like, he won't admit that he kept Isaiah Thomas off the team, right? And he sort of, you know, that falls on Rod Thorne, so to speak, on the Dream Team. He said, oh, I never said anyone's name. I never, you know, and I just asked who was going to be on the team. You know, I never said. And, of course, we all know what he was implying. And, you know, you see just, you know, he, you know, the Republican comment. Now, that's what I found interesting, actually, because that's something that stuck with him over the years, right? Well, Republicans buy shoes, too. And it's interesting that it was just sort of a flippant comment that he made sort of jokingly on the bus that turned into something that stuck with him for years.
No, you're right. And again, in this type of media that we see today, and it's been like that through the history, right? Reporters, journalists, they're trying to get you to speak, and then they're trying to get a quote that they could utilize to gain an advantage and to create controversy. That is the basis of what they do. Now, having said that, Michael Jordan probably said it as a joke that Republicans, all Republicans buy Nikes as well. It was kind of funny, but that it stuck because, you know, in the United States at that time, there was that gentleman in North Carolina that was running for the Senate, and Michael Jordan did not advocate for him. And then you had other players on his team in the NBA that were more and more proponent in terms of defending and promoting civil rights. But at the same time, Michael Jordan wasn't about that, and he wasn't afraid to say it. Michael Jordan wanted to win every single game he played, and then when he was off, he wanted to get on the golf course. It's just that simple. Or he wanted to go to the casino. So Michael Jordan, as you said, he didn't care, and he doesn't really care what people think about him right now because he's made his money and he is the greatest of all time. But I like the fact that we're seeing a side that people didn't get to see of Michael, but it's not the complete true side because, again, 10 episodes is a lot, but in this context, you could have 10 episodes for half a year.
Yeah, each player.
And this guy plays so good, right?
You could have an episode for his relationship with each guy almost. It makes me wonder, though, besides Scottie Pippen, how many of these people he really did appreciate? You know what I mean? I'd like to know, like, you know, there's a resentment factor that you weren't the only one on the court as great as you were. And, you know, it must be – it's a difficult situation for other players to be in. Now, it's interesting of all people here, and you never really think of it, but Craig Hodges. Craig Hodges is not interviewed. And he says, I wonder why, you know, I was never interviewed as part of this. And, you know, one thing with Hodges, he's kind of tips his hand here in which he's upset. He's upset about the cocaine circus comments. So what are you saying? Like, you're the one he was calling out? And it's crazy because he wasn't even on the team yet, Hodges, at that point. But he goes, it bothered me when he's talking about cocaine circus. He goes, here we are getting ready to watch this documentary. And everyone on your family knows you're on the team and you have to explain this to your 12-year-old boy. What about a cocaine circus? And he goes on about how he didn't like how Jordan called out Pippen for being selfish, for holding off on surgery during a contract dispute. He didn't like Jordan blaming Horace Grant for leaking information to writer Sam Smith for the bombshell Jordan Rules book. Then he starts going off. Then he said, Scotty was selfish. Come on, man, says Hodges. Then that last night when Horace, that hurt me. I'm letting MJ know that ain't right. Horace didn't deserve to take the fall for the Jordan Rules. If MJ knows something else and knows Horace's motive, then tell us. Horace did it for my sake because I'm your teammate, brother, just like they are. And I'm kind of salty. Everyone got interviewed but me, says Hodges. After the fact, but you know, he probably didn't get interviewed because Jordan didn't want him to get interviewed, right?
Well, again, listen, Jordan's controlling this narrative, no question about it. It's his documentary. We thought it was going to be the 1997-98 Chicago Bulls journey of their sixth title, but it is like the journey of Michael Jordan, stemming from when he was in North Carolina and played for Dean Smith. And listen, it's great. You know, we're watching it and it's bringing back memories for guys like me and you. It's creating new information for the younger generation that really didn't know Jordan. But I'm trying to look at this at both ways. And I love the positive things that you're seeing. What I really liked is how about Michael Jordan with his parents trying to sign a shoe deal and Converse was the shoe of the NBA. How about Larry Bird mic dropping with Magic Johnson and those guys, Bernard King. That was an awesome commercial. I hadn't seen that in a long time. And then Adidas, he wanted to have an Adidas shoe, and Adidas said, listen, we're not making you a signature shoe. We don't have, whether it was the money or the timing. Can you imagine a billion, multi-billion dollar mistake that was? And then, okay, his brother's telling him, go to Oregon, take the flight, listen to Nike. And then, boom, he signs for $250 and he gets his own shoe, and the rest is history. You know, how about him with Clyde Drexler, right, in the 1992 final, and say, yeah, Clyde, Jordan, who's, and he tells Magic, watch what I'm going to give this guy tomorrow. And then he goes up for six threes the first time. It's just incredible the way Michael was able to lift himself, lift the Bulls. At the end of the day, they never lost in the finals when he participated. But here's one thing, Gabe, I want to mention. Will they talk about when he returned in 1995 and he lost to Penny and Shaquille O'Neal? I'm curious to see if they have that in the Last Dance in the next couple episodes.
Yeah, you know, where he faces it, exactly. And it's funny you bring up Clyde Drexler. And I think it goes back to Clyde Drexler was someone that vocally spoke up about Isaiah Thomas not being on the Dream Team. And he basically was vocal at the time even saying, I guess in the room he told people, you know, because there was other guys that were like, you know, this is garbage just because Jordan doesn't like him, that he's not on the team. And I know Jordan, like I said, Jordan finds out you say anything about him at any time, then you're on his hit list. And he didn't like that he was compared to Clyde Drexler, that there were comparisons between the two. So as you stated, that was just another guy on his list. So how do you, though, how do we equate his ultra-competitiveness and his ultra-successfulness, yet it is true what Barkley has stated. Michael Jordan has not been a good basketball executive. You know what I mean? He wasn't good when he was in charge in Washington. You know, he famously made Kwame Brown cry, and, you know, we can go on. And then, you know, subsequently now with Charlotte are really one of the stranger run franchises in the NBA. Let's just be real. Right. So like his, for all of his greatness and his competitiveness, it hasn't translated at all. And it's surprising to me that, you know, he's not smarter as far as knowing which players to sign, who to stay away from. He gives players bad contracts. And it's interesting because, you know, I don't have to tell you, he's into motorcycles and stuff too. Right. And he's got, like, racing teams and stuff that are successful. And they said, oh, yeah, he dropped, like, you know, 10, 15 million until he won, actually. He was getting so upset. Like, he was basically, he kept going, I'm going to win. We haven't seen him come close to winning in the NBA as an executive.
No, he hasn't. And just to go back one point and thinking about the first six episodes, we're seeing one of his best friends and a guy that didn't really have a lot of impact on the court, Randy Brown being in so many of the episodes, right?
Yeah.
And then Craig Hodges is not even invited, right? And we remember Craig Hodges winning those back-to-back three-point shootouts in the NBA All-Star game. So it is what it is. Randy Brown is in those the last dance because he was friends with Michael Jordan.
And the, Michael Jordan the security guard with the white hair is now a big star too, right? Like he's the guy with the shrug.
That is some kind of hair. It reminds me a little bit of Ruud Gullit, who played for Netherlands for so many years. But anyways, that's some kind of hairdo. Michael Jordan, there's not many superstar athletes who have made the transition either to a coach or to a GM in ownership and have had a lot of success. So, you know, we saw Magic Johnson struggle when he was a head coach with the Lakers. Didn't have that much success as the VP of the Lakers as well, even though he got the LeBron to sign. They missed the playoffs. You think of Wayne Gretzky and his problems when he became a coach and a GM. I think the only guy, and again, I don't have this research here, Gabe, but the one guy that comes to mind that had success that was a superstar player in the NBA was Larry Bird. Bird was a great coach with the Pacers, was a great GM. But it's hard because, hey, Michael Jordan.
Well, Jerry West, guys, going back, like if we go back in era, right? We say
yeah,
Jerry West. You.
Yeah, it probably.
Jerry West, there's a few, but there's guys, though, if you think about it, like, I know what you mean, but it's almost like, you know, almost like half the NBA, actually, is like former players, you know what I mean? In some sense. So I know he's not a coach. Now, listen, Phil Jackson wasn't a star player, right? He was on a championship team, but he wasn't a star player per se. I totally get it. As far as star players, they never translate into being good coaches. You mentioned Larry Bird, like, but, you know, there's others. Let's say even a guy that he hates so much, Isaiah Thomas. Right? Isaiah Thomas, people forget, put together the original Raptors, right?
Right.
And you know, there's guys, though, that have gone on runs, at least, that have been in the NBA. You know, it's just – it's sort of like Charlotte are just always bad people. You know what I mean? Like, it's like he never gets – it's not like, oh, he was close that year. It's like, no, he's never close. Like, what are the Charlotte – what's their plan? They never – like, they don't have anything. Like, they're just – they are a poorly run franchise.
They are, and they've been like this for so many years since Jordan was became the owner. And Barkley was right. I mean, he hired a lot of his friends and people that he was close to in high, powerful positions. And what we've learned in professional sports over the years, and you know this more than anybody, Gabe, when you're the owner of a team, you got to get out of the way. You got to hire yourself a president or a vice president that's going to run your operations, whether it's basketball or it's football or baseball, and let him hire his people. You're the owner. Provide them the necessary platform for them to be successful. If you believe that you're such a great evaluator of talent and you know the cap and you know how to bring in best players, then okay, go ahead and prove it. But Michael Jordan has proven that he's not Kwame Brown, oh my God, one of the biggest busts, number one overall, that you'll ever see. And even now, and you know, I'm friends with Kemba Walker, and he was with the Charlotte Hornets for a number of years, and Kemba's the most humble guy you'll ever meet. So I try to ask him questions about Jordan, the team, and he just said, man, Jordan's the big brother. Jordan's the big brother. He'll never say it. But I could tell, you know, Kemba was frustrated. He went there, he signed a long-term contract, and man, who did they get him? Nicholas Batum to play with all these years, right? Cody Zeller. They didn't bring any players to support with Kemba Walker. And honestly, Kemba Walker is not a number one alpha male player on a team on a superstar. He'll be a great number two. Yeah. And Charlotte might be a, you know, it's not a big time, you know, city in the U.S. like a Chicago, New York, and L.A., but it's still a great place to live in and raise a family. I think the Hornets have been disappointed, and you have to give the responsibility and the accountability to Michael Jordan.
Now, one, and I guess it's their personalities. It was their personalities that Michael Jordan would respect about Kobe Bryant. But it's interesting in which Kobe sought out. Kobe sought out Michael Jordan earlier in his career. Clearly looked up to him. And, you know, I don't know, like, Jordan never really had that guy, right? It's like Jordan's just so independent that, you know, I don't know if Jordan even like really wanted to mentor someone at that point when Kobe comes around him when he's just a kid.
It's a good point that you make, because Jordan got cut in high school famously, right, by the varsity coach. And then he came back, he grew some inches, he became a great player in North Carolina, wins the championship, hits the big shot to win it, even though he wasn't the best player in that game. James Worthy was. Sam Perkins was the second best player. And Jordan just hit that big shot. But he had the big career, Carolina. And then he gets to the Bulls. Again, Jordan was probably the best individual player in terms of, hey, I'm going to make it happen on my own. And we saw it when Doug Collins was the coach. And he made him, you know, all those isolation plays, which did work. But Phil Jackson brought in the triangle, got him moving the ball. But still, at the end of the day, even with the triangle, Jordan was taking most of those shots. But Kobe wanted to be exactly like Michael Jordan. You could see the way they walk, the way they dress. Their warm-ups are the same. You look at Jordan when he was warming up in 91, 92. He would cut the T-shirt, put the T-shirt inside his big pants. Kobe Bryant was like that all the time. And I think that the greatness of Kobe is because he wanted to be exactly like Michael Jordan. And it was great to see Kobe speak about that. But again, same thing. Michael Jordan was not a great teammate. Michael Jordan didn't hang out with players. He didn't want to hang out with them off the court. There was no team unity. Kobe Bryant was like that as well. That's why there was such a big rift between him and Shaq. And that's why ultimately they chose the younger superstar in Kobe over Shaq, because they knew Shaq wasn't in – they didn't really do everything to get in shape, and they foresaw that he wasn't going to have the same type of longevity like a Kobe Bryant. But those two guys were the same. Magic was competitive, right? He wanted to win, but he had that smile where – you know, he sold so many tickets in Showtime, but behind the scenes, him and Jordan hated each other. Magic wanted to beat him up. Larry Bird couldn't stand him either. And that's why when they're the three of them together, Magic's still bugging him. Hey, don't get too close to Michael. That's a foul, right? So that was one of the best parts that I'll take from the last two episodes.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. all major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Yeah, it's great. I don't often say great commercials, but you know, I just remember the old McDonald's commercial with Jordan and Bert. That's the thing. Like, and at least Michael Jordan, though, and Michael Jordan acknowledged, right, in a documentary that it bothered him that people said he wasn't as good as Magic, and he's not a winner like Magic, right? That was the thing. They're like, yeah, he's great, but he's not a winner like Larry Bird. He's not a winner like Magic Johnson. And then he became that winner, and then he just sort of became the jerk and passed them after. That's the thing. Like, it's just his jerkdom as a whole. Now, somebody brought this up, actually, to me when watching it. It's funny because a younger dude, he's on our network, Kevin Walsh, good kid, good guy, and he's smart. Like, he knows a lot about sports, but like a lot of millennials, he needs, he needs sort of say a history lesson every now and then, right? So I made it like an assignment for him, Pete, because he's one of these guys. LeBron's the best player ever. He's better than, Jordan and all this stuff. So I said, no, you got to watch this and you'll learn a bit. And he is watching it and he's respecting the hell out of Jordan and all that. But he asked me, he's like, what's up with the baggy clothes in those days, man? Like, why are their suits like 10 sizes too big? It is funny seeing the clothes of the NBA star in that era, man. I mean, Scottie Pippen's Blazers and stuff, bro. Like, they're like a set of drapes, man. They were so big.
They want to feel loose, man. They want to feel loose and comfortable.
It was really... it's funny, going back in time and, just so you sort of see the impact that he had at the time, in which the quote is, Jerry Rice, I want to be like Mike also. And, it's the timing. It's hard to put everything in perspective in life with this stuff. And it's weird because when I think of Michael Jordan, I don't really think of Seinfeld and Seinfeld like being like ruling TV at the same time Michael Jordan did. But I guess they did. You know what I mean? As you see, when he's like, Seinfeld's there, and he's like number one show with the number one player here. And, it's easy as we get older, Pete, to sort of lose track of time, isn't it, man?
Oh, my God. I think the one guy that probably you should get on the show that have the best insights is Ahmad Rashad, right? This guy got to hang out, got every inside scoop. Michael Jordan stopped, speaking to the media for a couple of weeks. He was so upset when that came out. But he loses game one to the Knicks. Okay, Dad, let's go to Atlantic City. Let's go relax. I mean, this guy was just unbelievable. But again, it was the will to win, the competition, that song, right? Sometimes I dream that he is me, to be like Mike. We all wanted to be like Mike. Everybody did. Just because he would win and he won with the swagger. He won with the competitiveness. He brought in the baggy shorts. And the thing is about it, I won't stop saying this. He didn't quit on those young Bulls. he stayed the course. He took the beatings. He took the losses to the Celtics, then to the Pistons, beat them, and then started winning. And, you know, and that's the difference what we saw here with some of the newer guys. You know, LeBron James left Cleveland. Kevin Durant left OKC. Let's go join Golden State. Let's go join D-Wade and Bosch and win. That's why there was so much respect, because Jordan was someone that everybody could identify with. Yes, he had talent, but the hard work and the resiliency to overcome all those defeats and to win. And I'll say this. You know, when they compared Drexler to Jordan, he got so pissed off. I mean, he told Magic, and then he started shooting threes that Jordan didn't really shoot. He shot 42% from three in that series in 1992 in the NBA Finals. 35 points a game, 7 assists, 6 rebounds. Clyde Drexler averaged 25 points a game, had a pretty good series, unfortunately only 15% from three. And then I fast forward to 2011, Gabe Morenci, Dallas Mavericks versus Miami Heat, LeBron James, right? LeBron James was outperformed by Jason Terry. Jason Terry had 18 points a game. LeBron James had 17 points a game. They lost to Jason Terry and the Dallas Mavericks. That would never happen with Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls. And the debate ends forever. Don't compare LeBron to Michael Jordan.
Yeah, and I wonder, you know, so... And they kind of kept their how close they were a secret. People really didn't know over the last years. And you saw how broken up he was. In our last minute say here with Pete Annapolis, you saw Michael Jordan at the ceremony for Kobe Bryant, how broken up he was. You know, as you brought up, I wonder, you know, what he thinks of LeBron James, who he's been – you see how slighted he gets if you even bring up that anyone's like him. You know what I mean? or as good as he is, or like was a winner like he is. You know, I'd like to, you know, get his honest take after a couple of bottles of his tequila that he's drinking there. That, you know, I'd like to get an honest take. What do you think when people say that LeBron's better than you? Like the real answer. You know what I mean? Because, you know, I can't, as you stated, the switching teams, the losing in the finals as much as LeBron has done, I just think he would say that LeBron is a great player, but don't compare it to me. We're not even in the same bubble as far as competitive. Like, I know I can't speak for Jordan, but I think he looks at himself more like a Larry Bird. Like a Larry Bird that would run you over, right? Like, sorry, you're in my way. I have to run you over, right? But... then as opposed to LeBron and the hug stuff and everything. I'd like to know his real take as far as that is concerned.
Yeah, I would like to know it as well. And again, listen, LeBron is one of the best players of all time. There's no question about it. But when you look at, you know, Jordan and you look at Magic and Bird in that era, right, they were all about winning championships. Like a lot of people tend to forget, you know, people said, oh my God, LeBron James made 9 NBA Finals. Magic Johnson did that before he was 30 years old, and he won 5 championships and lost 4. And he was going against Larry Bird every single year. So, again, that's how I base and I measure the superstars in terms of the championships they won. And it's funny, Michael Jordan won 6 NBA championships. When LeBron James went to the Miami Heat, there's a reason why he said he was going to win not 1, not 2, not 3, not 4, not 5, not 6, not 7 championships, because he wanted to surpass Michael Jordan. Listen, he's got 3. There's still time to go. Hopefully we'll get an NBA season here. But Jordan was able to do this, right, with 2 different teams in terms of the core. Scottie Pippen stayed, but everybody else changed, right? The first core, you had Cartwright, you had Paxson, you had Horace Grant. And then the second core, you had Rodman that came in, Kukoc came in, Longley came in, Ron Harper came in as the guard. You know, B.J. Armstrong was on the first team, so... this was Jordan and Pippen. I think Pippen deserves a lot more credit in this championship run that they got. But again, this is a Michael Jordan documentary, not just the Chicago Bulls. But I'd like to hear more stories about, hey, what they think about who are the greatest of all time. Because when you look at what those guys from the Dream Team did, individual careers were incredible. But I'll tell you this right now. I can't believe it watching it the other night, Gabe. The Phoenix Suns were up 94-90 with 40 seconds left in game 6 at home. And they had possession of the ball. And you know who took the jump shot with 40 seconds to go? Frank Johnson for the Suns.
And I remembered in 93 saying, what is he doing? Because I wanted Phoenix to win. I wanted Barkley to get a championship. And he misses the shot. Jordan to get the rebound. He goes coast to coast, gets the layup quickly. They miss again. They come back. They double-team Jordan. Horace Grant to Paxson for a three. Imagine if Phoenix had a game seven at home against the Bulls in 1993. Yes, you don't know what's going to happen. But some of these plays that happen, and for us to revisit them again, I can't believe Frank Johnson took that shot.
You're right. They were so close. A lot of teams, as you mentioned, Karl Malone missing shots late and, you know, free throw here. And that's the legend of this guy, that what a closer that he was. And, you know, Brooks Koepka, one of the best golfers in the world now, told a story. He said, I played golf against Michael Jordan. And, you know, of course, for money. Now, he didn't say how many, because obviously Koepka is like, you know, one of the best in the world of all. You know what I mean? He's that good. Jordan's good, but obviously he spotted him a couple of strokes. But he goes, he didn't say how many strokes. But I guess so. Koepka was up. All right. And he goes, we're on the 17th hole. Brooks Koepka's winning. And he goes, I started trash talking Michael Jordan. And he goes, yeah, there I am, trash talking Michael Jordan. I'm like, you know, telling him, man, you thought you were going to beat me at golf, bro? Like, you know, you're Michael Jordan, but, you know, come on. Like, I'm Brooks Koepka, and you're not going to beat me at golf. And Brooks Koepka told him, get the money ready. Get the money ready. And Jordan looked at him and said, the whole 17 and 18 are the fourth quarter. And he goes, I never lose in the fourth quarter. Jordan came back and beat him. Jordan, and Koepka said after, he said, man, he said all that. He goes, all that stuff about Jordan, man, like getting in your head. He goes, it's real. He goes, man, he started coming on, and he closed, and he beat me. And, like, it wasn't an even, like, he spotted him scores, but it was funny. Like, there's one of the best golfers in the world confident enough to talk smack to Jordan saying, hey, you're done, buddy. Only two holes left here. And Jordan's like, no, I'm not. And somehow Koepka actually chokes Pete, you know? That's the Tiger effect, though, right? Tiger used to do that to people. Like, you know, Tiger used to win, and it'd be like, oh, what a great day by Tiger. And I'd be like, you know, he only really shot par. Everyone else kind of choked around him.
Two of the most competitive guys we've seen and two of the best closers we've ever seen in professional sports in Tiger Woods and Michael Jordan. But, you know, when you watch the replays of these games, these teams were close. They were in it. They were up in a lot of the games. And Jordan, as you mentioned, Gabe, he is the ultimate closer. He would bring them back. He would will his team to win. You know, when you look at, you know, against the Knicks, they were down 2-0, right? And the Knicks thought they had the series. And then here we go. Poor Charles Smith, man. He got blocked three times. Another poor New York fans watching that. They're like, oh, my God, how did this? And Mike Francesco's probably, like, you know, falling off his couch.
Listen, we've only got a couple of minutes left here. But let me ask you, and I see one player that we haven't talked about, that I see similarities in the trades of a Kobe, of a Michael Jordan, and just sort of the hybrid modern sort of champion is Kawhi Leonard, right? In which Kawhi Leonard, like, basically, like, Jordan made people around him better through intimidation, right? It was like, all right, we're on the court with Jordan. I got to be better. I can't screw up because he's going to punch me in the face in practice. Right, and if he, you know, if he doesn't punch me, he's gonna yell. We saw that, like, he was very demanding and toxic to be around, but he did get the best out of players. Right, it wasn't like, you know, some guys, Gretzky made people around him better because it's like, dude, just go here and you'll score. All right, like, you know, he'll see it before you did. Jordan brought the best out of people through fear and intimidation. That if I don't play better, whatever, I'm not gonna be here, or he's gonna lose it on me. Kawhi Leonard almost has that same presence, though, doesn't he? In which, you know, Kawhi, he's not as mean-spirited, but I think Kawhi's a little meaner than people realize, and or doesn't care, at least, like, what you think or about your feelings, or, you know what I mean? And, like, you look, like, the Raptors were a better team this year because of Kawhi Leonard being there before, right? You know, Siakam got better. Even though they might not have been best friends, Siakam just was around him and saw it. you know, Kyle Lowry learned how to win sort of being around Kawhi Leonard, you know, just how to get on. He was close, but just sort of that, you know, and I just sort of think of just how great Kawhi is in that sense, that the dude just makes people better, man.
Oh, he does. And I love that you mentioned Kyle Lowry, because here's an alpha male that is not afraid of anybody and is really hesitant to give respect and credit to people. Kyle Lowry was like, hey, I learned about, you know, winning with Kawhi Leonard next to me. This guy's a machine. His work ethic, I think he doesn't get the same fanfare like, you know, like Jordan and LeBron and all the greats, because he doesn't want to speak to the media at all.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about people that are afraid of Kawhi Leonard, you know, the players don't want to play him. And what Kawhi did to Giannis, you know, in that series after the second game, right? Nick Nurse said, okay, Kawhi, you're getting Giannis nonstop. And then when he had that, it was like game over. They won four straight. And Kawhi Leonard has an opportunity, Gabe, here. He has an opportunity with the Clippers. If he wins a championship, that's winning three championships with three different teams, right? San Antonio,
yeah, and
Toronto.
And MVP.
And
like, not just racking
a couple
it up,
there,
yeah.
Yeah, he gets into that conversation.
No, you know, he really could. That's the thing. He never will. He won't get that credit. I mean, look, he's got two championships. Two final MVPs. He wins another one. Bing, he's tied with LeBron. There's three or three championships, right? And he's younger, actually, too. One thing, the Clippers, to me, very dangerous team coming out of this, if hypothetically we played the playoffs, because of Kawhi. Kawhi can put the pedal to the metal. It would be really cool. We got to get out of here now, but it really would be really cool if they do play this. Part of me is like, well, there's an asterisk next to it. But another part of it is, hey, you'd see LeBron James and Kawhi pedal to the metal knowing it's only 5 weeks. You know what I mean? It's like, all right, I'm going to go all out here. It's 5 weeks. And I like the Raptors in any format. I like their chances in any format. I really do. But, Pete, I appreciate you joining us. I appreciate your time, as always. I look forward to seeing which way the last dance turns as we head into the final stretch of this. But it's always a pleasure kicking you with, my man. Thanks a lot for taking the time to be with us on Morenci Unfiltered Sports Grid, Apple, iTunes, Spotify, and everything else. Thanks, Pete.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you, because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn. And most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get on the grid, the sports grid, Morenci Unfiltered, the podcast, kicking it, Spotify, Apple, iTunes, you know the digits, you know the drill. Let's talk some college football right now, because in a time of uncertainty, there's a lot of uncertainty, of course, in the real world. There's a lot of uncertainty in the sports world. Is baseball coming back? What about the NBA playoffs? NFL football, of course, releasing their schedule. But a lot of people are wondering about college football. And the commissioners, the conference commissioners, and the athletic directors of the respective universities are consistently talking to each other. And the plans are evolving. Yet it looks as if, though, that we could be in a situation in which some conferences are playing and some conferences aren't playing. And it could be a situation where some teams in a conference will be able to play, but some other teams in there in the same conference would not be able to play. And there a lot of these conference commissioners right now are sort of talking to each other and putting together revised plans right now. Let's bring in a man that's anxiously awaiting some finalized plans. Joe Lisi steps up in it. Go for two. What's going on, Joe? Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I'm doing well, Gabe. I mean, you said it best. I mean, let's just get some plans finalized. I don't care who's playing. As long as we're kicking off August 29th and there's lines on games, that's good enough for me. We'll deal with the abbreviated schedule as it plays out. But I just want college football to be there Labor Day weekend.
You know, and it seems to me there's some games that I think are going to go on and some games I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't bank on. Like Michigan, Washington, I don't know if that game's going to happen. Right? You know, the game's supposed to be in Washington. Is that really going to happen? Is Michigan going to be ready to go? But it seems to me, Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC, was saying that, you know, if we're able to go, you know, we're going to play. And the problem is, guys, so it's, you know, like you said, Joe, we all want football. We're going to get football. I think there's going to be some college football on TV. But what happens, let's say, if the SEC plays, the Big 12 plays, the Conference USA plays, the Mountain West plays and the Sun Belt plays, but let's say there's no Pac-12, there's no ACC, and there's no Big Ten. Do you still have the playoffs, or you just have a playoff for a year? Stuff like that, Joe. What do you think?
Yeah, we might have like an NIT type of tournament. You never know as it plays out. I mean, that's a great point. I mean, what I can tell you is I think the more Power 5 conferences that do come on board will put pressure on a conference such as the Pac-12 that does have the state of California, USC, UCLA, and Oregon that set their order. I believe it was until July. You saw Newsom as well, Gabe. He said that he just came out with a statement that said we're not weeks away, we're possibly days away. So I think as these other Power 5 conferences open up and let's say move towards college football, that could put the pressure on the other conferences such as the Pac-12 and the Big Ten to possibly open up or at least get things in order.
Yeah, well, there's definitely going to be pressure put on everyone. There's so much money at stake. It's, you know, listen, the one benefit that the college football has in the NFL, they have time on their side, right? And you see now there's that quarantine fatigue. People are really getting fed up. And, you know, just imagine by fall, if there's not football, people are going to snap. But you get into the case of, can you have students on a campus, right? And, you know, I know that that's something they're talking about as well. You know, they're going to encourage more online classes more than ever right now. But some of these ADs, out of pretty much sheer greed, are saying, hey, listen, if there's students on, you know, if there's students, you know, and it's online classes, you know, we could still play the games in an empty stadium, right? And then you get into some of the commissioners actually want fans still at these games. I think, you know, it's going to be interesting, but we're going to end up with sort of a splintered situation. I mean, I don't know. I don't see how there's non-conference games, Joe. Like, are the Michigan Wolverines really flying to Seattle to play the Washington Huskies now?
That's a huge game, though, Gabe. It's week one, and it has huge implications for possible national championship or conference titles. So, I mean, if you're Michigan and you want to build your resume, you want to play that game out west against the Huskies with a new head coach. Now, I don't know how it's going to play out. How about week two? You have Ohio State on the road at Oregon. I mean, that's a huge game for both programs as well. That could either make or break Ohio State making the college football playoff this year, and the same for Oregon. So there's some critical matchups that need to be played, Alabama, USC on a neutral field in Arlington as well. And the localized businesses for some of these teams, I mean, you're talking about the SEC. In the state of Alabama, that's all they have. They have Auburn, they have Alabama, and that is it. They need to have college football. Otherwise, those businesses come later in the year might not survive.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. And, you know, but look, how about in our backyard here right now? You know, do you see Rutgers being able to play? There wouldn't be fans if Rutgers played.
That's right? True. And I mean, it's any different.
That's the thing, Joe, where there's going to be competitive weird imbalances. You know, let's say like Ohio State goes and they play the Ducks. It's going to be easier for them if there's no fans there, obviously. Then suddenly it's just like a scrimmage game and they're more talented and they don't have that sort of variable of the band and the crazy noise and everything that they have to deal with. yet some other teams in the SEC might have to deal with fans. You know, I don't think in Florida and these places are going to say no fans. They're going to say, oh, no, no, it's fine. And you're going to have fans even if they get sick or whatever. So, you know, like the commissioner of, or I should say the athletic director of Notre Dame, Jack Swarbrick, said, they're basically going to have to live with competitive imbalances this year. It's just going to be the way that it is in certain instances.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. It's going to be interesting. It really will be interesting to see what comes about. We saw Notre Dame's AD come out and say that the football players will be on the campus possibly before the students. So it's in the works. I know I've talked to a couple of coaches out in the ACC, and they said they're on schedule in the sense of whatever the ACC allows them to do, they're going to do. So if they say full schedule, they're going ahead as they're playing a full schedule. So we'll see. Arkansas came out and said they're full bore ahead as well. So some programs are moving as promised, and others are taking a wait-and-see type of approach.
No, you're exactly right. And listen, in the South, you know, we see politically already they've opened up or they never even shut down, right?
Right.
But the thing is, they don't realize that it could get worse as it goes on. So, you know, how do you have a playoff, though? I mean, you can argue, listen, if the Big 12 is playing, you know, as it is now, this is the deal here, guys. Discussions, two sources discussed the concept of regional schedules as opposed to, like, flying around everywhere. They want to cut travel down. So, as I stated, like a game like Michigan and Washington or Ohio State going all the way out to Oregon could be a problem. Two sources discussed the concept of regional schedules with CBS Sports this week. One source didn't want to be named. However, American Football Coaches Association Executive Director Todd Perry described the concept in detail. He said discussions are taking place in pairing the SEC with the Sun Belt, the Pac-12 with the Mountain West, and the Big 12 with Conference USA. So, like, basically, just like for say, hypothetically, the Mountain West is already on record, Joe, is saying they would play even without San Diego State, Fresno State, and San Jose State, right? But it would leave holes in the schedule. So these other conferences sort of, they could be mixed and matched this year a little bit, right? The Big 12, Conference USA, or they could scrap their non-conference games that they had planned and just play against these conferences, I think they could end up doing. Either way, there's still a lot of unknowns, but I think the positive is, Joe, there's going to be college football in some form. Maybe not every conference, every school, but there'll be college football games on TV.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, because there's so much money, Gabe. I mean, just what they talked about, if there was no college season, it could be in the area of lost money and revenue for everyone, $4.8 billion. Think about that for a second. $4.8 billion lost if the college football season does not follow through, and some of these schools might not make it. So, and that's really the unfortunate part about that is that kids go to school for extracurricular activities. It's not just football. It's water polo, soccer, baseball. Those activities and those sports are around because of the college basketball and college football programs. If they can't go to drive in the revenue, those other programs are going to be cut.
Yeah, it'll be devastating, without a doubt. You know, they lost a ton of revenue already when they lost out on March Madness and the conference tournaments. And, yeah, it would be devastating. Now, the questions, you know, the biggest questions, and they have to be realistic about everything. The problem is college football is played at the FBS level in 41 states. All right? So the FBS level is 41 states. And not all 41 states are going to be on the same page. And they're also not going to be in the same health at the same time, potentially. So options on the table now. Are a delayed start to the season where they still play 12 games, start the season on time, drop the interconference, play interconference only. So drop the out-of-conference games. No out-of-conference games or play out-of-conference games in your region against like the conferences we just talked about that are close geographically to you. This is something interesting, Joe. A season split over two semesters in late 2020. So they start later. They don't start in September. They start, let's say, in November, and then they actually play in January and February. Like they actually sort of, you know, they push everything back a couple of months. A season split over two semesters in late 2020 and early 2021. That's something that's getting a push, supposedly.
I can't imagine that for this, the only reason of if you're college basketball and the TV rights that go with all the networks, they're going to give way to the college football, right? Because college football drives the bus. Now, if you lost out on March Madness, you're going to lose out on another college basketball season, and those schools are going to lose revenue. Because the bottom line, if you're at a program, and let's say LSU's basketball program is playing Florida in basketball and hoops, but LSU is taking on Alabama, where do you think the fans are going for that matchup?
Yeah, but at the same, listen, I hear what you're saying. I get it. And it's the same thing. I mean, look at something like, you're exactly right, like ESPN. Let's say they play the NBA playoffs and Major League Baseball's play. What are people going to watch? They're going to watch Kawhi Leonard versus LeBron James over a regular season baseball game, right? And they're paying all these rights for it. You're right. But we're in an era, Joe, where, and, you know, the networks are going to be in a good spot because it's going to happen. And as you stated, there's going to be a ton of sports back at once. I mean, as it is now, Joe, the Kentucky Derby is for Saturday, September the 5th. And they're going to have that. Like, they rescheduled. That's college football, right? That's the big day. I mean, there was a ton of big games that day, right? The Alabama, USC, Michigan, Washington, that's that day. There's also going to be the Kentucky Derby, which is a massive thing. God knows there could be a big boxing match thrown in there that night, right? I just think it's going to be one of these deals. It's going to be overload. We're going to go from having no sports on TV to, like, overboard sports on TV.
We're going to have an all-nighter in terms of the gambling aspect. Well, that's the thing. Like, if the Kentucky Derby is going off on Labor Day weekend, how many people go to that, right? And that's in Lexington. So you're telling me if you get 1.5 million people, you know, crammed into Lexington, you can't make the argument that you can't have it in Washington? I mean, Washington was the first state to go on board. They should be the first to come out of this, no?
That's a good point. You would figure, you would hope at this point in time. I think it's far away enough. You know, I think they're going to play. You know, they're going to have to worry. The thing is, the coaches aren't young either, right? There's a lot of older coaches. It's not just the kids on the team. There's a lot of testing involved. Yet the universities have labs. The universities, I saw, like, you know, Texas Tech University says they're going to be able to test every student when they return. They said they made their own tests in their own labs, and they're going to test every student when they come back, and they're going to monitor everything. And, you know, so the universities seem to be putting together a plan more than the governments actually are, because they understand the revenue that they could potentially lose, not just with football, but with students not being there. But, you know, I'm being positive about it. And I do, like I said, I can't guarantee the people listening right now that every school in America and the schedule is going to be played as is the way that it is. But I can guarantee you there will be college football on TV this year. And the SEC will be playing, right? The SEC is playing. They're not turning back. The SEC is going to play unless they medically can't, Joe. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, if there's one conference that you had a bet on to come in and say they're playing no matter what, you would say it's the SEC over everybody else, right? They're going to find a way to get those games kicked off and make sure that those stands are somewhat packed because of their localized businesses and the revenue that it brings in. So it's interesting. And don't think that, you know, Big Brother isn't watching too in terms of Vegas. If you don't think that the books are going to have a little bit of weight going, hey, we can't miss out again on another huge revenue driver in terms of NFL and college football, that's huge revenue to those casinos and books.
Oh yeah, the pressure will be enormous. You know, the thing is, not that anyone ever really cared about the kids to begin with before, but there are safety issues they have to worry about. Like, you know what I mean? But yeah. Football is bigger than anything. And I think football is bigger than people's safety, as you stated. I mean, there's already an open up push now. People's patience are thin. Nobody's ever really met the threshold of anything. We're in uncharted territory. The thing is, Joe, like, when you see the Korean Baseball League is back and, like, the German Soccer League is restarting, they actually, like, did testing. They quarantined players. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it took them a month and a half, 6 weeks of preparation and planning and actually everybody buying into the plan. We don't see that here. You know, that's my concern about it, that when you have 41 states involved, I don't know if 41 governors and 41 people are going to see the same, but – you know, you're right. You know, it's going to be the SEC is going to play. The Sun Belt's going to play. The Big 12 is going to play. Like, Oklahoma's not shutting this stuff down. Texas isn't shutting stuff down. Like, you look at politically, like Arkansas, you look at the states at the SEC or in Tennessee, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, already open. So unless they just get ambushed and medically they can't do it, you got to believe that they will be playing. So there's a light at the end of the tunnel. So when you do your previews, at least you know, all right, I'm not doing a preview for nothing yet, Joe. They're going to be playing these games.
Well, I'm glad that they're going to go to some use. You know, we have to see. It's been a while. I mean, I haven't seen a legitimate line. You know, that's what I really want to see. Show me those lines for those games. I want to see them. I want to see them move. I want to see action in there. There's too much hesitancy right now. So hopefully we'll get that moving forward, and it starts this summer. You know, that's what it's all about. Baseball on board, NBA, like you mentioned, NHL, and NASCAR and UFC are starting up. So we'll see. We'll get a good gauge within the month of May.
Joe Lisi, go for the two. Morenci Unfiltered, get on the grid. At the Sports Grid, Spotify, Apple, iTunes. You know the digits. You know the drill.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.